I'm Steve Chiotakis. This is Greater LA, KCRW's new show that connects you to the people and the places of Southern California. It's mid-morning at the Tray Pack Container Terminal at the Port of Los Angeles. Here at the gate, trucks enter a loading area. Massive cranes retrieve the truck's cargo that's bound for export, then replace it with containers that are recently shipped in from around the Pacific. Of the seven terminals in San Pedro, Tray Pack is unique. That's because from the moment a shipping container touches dry land, robots do the work. Well, one thing you're not going to hear at this terminal, people. Self-driving carriers pick up the 25-ton containers between two wheeled legs, like how those emperor penguins carry their eggs. They dart around each other, sorting containers into stacks. Robot cranes deliver the cargo to waiting trucks and trains. Tray Pack, though, won't be unique for much longer, because right down the road, APM Maersk, which is much, much bigger, now says it wants to automate. And that is terrible news for 9,000 longshore workers here in Southern California.
For our experience, you know, we definitely took a job loss and we took a hit on the community, but that was a small little terminal. APM Maersk is the largest terminal in North America. So the impact is going to be far greater than Tray Pack was.
It's Gary Herrera, Vice President of Local 13 of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union, the ILWU. The port commissioners will decide by this Wednesday whether Maersk can replace its workers with robots. And Herrera says he is ready for battle.
I'm a born and raised in San Pedro, 46 years here, and this town has given me everything. I've coached high school basketball. I put both my kids through the public school system here, and I put them off to college. I love this town. There's nothing like it, and that's why I will fight to the end for my community.
And reporter Jackson Cantrell has been following automation at the Port of Los Angeles. He's with us here today. Hi, Jackson.
Hey, Steve.
So what kind of job losses are we talking about when it comes to automation in this big behemoth terminal?
Remember those stacking things that you heard about over at Tray Pack?
Yeah.
Well, that was 150 to 200 jobs lost, estimated.
Yeah.
But APM Maersk is a much larger terminal, so here we could expect to see up to 1,200 jobs.
So we're talking like almost 10 times.
Yeah, exactly.
And do these jobs just disappear? I mean, what happens in a situation like this? Did they just go poof?
Well, it's not exactly layoffs, but it chips away at the work that's available for everyone. So pretty much everyone's hours get cut, especially the temp workers who get the last pick of the shifts.
So it's kind of like a domino effect.
Yes, exactly.
So longshore work is well known for being among the last jobs, right? Where you don't necessarily need a college degree, but you can still make a decent living.
Exactly. These are some of the last well-paying blue-collar jobs in the area. I mean, some of these longshore workers, about half of them make over $100,000. And if you're a clerk or foreman, you make even more. So the people I spoke to, you know, they have money to send off their kids to college. They can donate to PTSA funds, you know, and support local businesses in San Pedro.
So obviously there's a lot at stake for these workers, and there's certainly a lot at stake for the union. It is, I guess, a symbol of what's been happening in the economy overall, right? That people are being replaced by automation, by artificial intelligence, things like that.
I mean, that's certainly how Gary Herrera sees it.
Technology is supposed to enhance our lives. It's not supposed to eliminate the ability to have a life. And I think what we're facing today with AI and robotics is they're getting rid of the human factor in all this. And I think it's time that we stand up and we have a revolution and we fight for humanity right now.
Herrera talked with me at a port commission hearing last month, and that's where the port commissioners were supposed to decide whether this terminal could automate, but 2,000 union supporters showed up and basically held a rally outside of the meeting.
Who are we? ILWU!
Who are we?
ILWU!
They brought their kids, spouses, parents, and they carried signs that said, "Don't let robots take our jobs. Automation hurts everyone, and robots don't pay taxes." So the port commissioners punted. They didn't decide what to do and put it off for a month. That's why we're expecting a decision this week. APM Terminals, which is operating the port that wants to automate, says they need to do this to stay competitive. Here's John Oakes from Maersk at an earlier hearing.
So if you look at our
our operation and where we're going to use the new machines against the vessel, we're confident that we can sustain our existing vessel productivity. Where we think we'll see the gains in efficiency is in our yard operation, where we transfer the containers from the yard to the outside trucker.
And actually, Steve, back in 2008, the union agreed to automation in their collective bargaining agreement.
So then couldn't someone say that this is part of what they negotiated, that this is what was expected?
Well, yes, the 2008 agreement says that union workers can't interfere with new automation technology. It also spells out that automated technology will displace longshore workers.
That was part of the negotiating agreement.
Yeah, but they didn't see these wholesale job losses. I mean, think about 10 years ago. We weren't talking about automated vehicles and cashierless McDonald's. In fact, this conflict at the port is inspiring all kinds of workers who are worried about automation.
My name is James Hicks. I'm a full-time Uber driver.
Hicks is the vice president of Rideshare Drivers United, and they're just as worried about automation as the workers at the ports. He actually came to the Port Commission hearing.
I came to California because I wanted to be an actor.
On TV now.
Yeah, right. And I'm afraid myself because this is my only source of income. But the reason why I stand here to fight today with you is because I don't want the story to be that when they came for longshoremen, I didn't stand because I wasn't a longshoreman. When they came for the Teamsters and the truck drivers and fast food workers, that I didn't stand with them because I don't drive a truck, nor do I flip hamburgers. It is important that no matter what someone does in their life, if they work, they deserve a living wage. It doesn't matter what that work is.
So, I mean, obviously, automation threatens a whole slew of workers in the coming years, so it's no surprise that he would be concerned. A lot of people are concerned. Jackson, that decision, the automation of Maersk over at the ports, that's coming at any moment this week?
Exactly. This decision is coming by Wednesday.
All right. Reporter Jackson Cantrell reporting for us this week. Thanks, Jackson.
Thanks for having me.
Well, for workers, automation isn't just a ports problem. Computers and robots could be doing the work of thousands of people all over Southern California just in the coming years. In places such as Riverside or San Bernardino or Ontario, researchers estimate that more than 60% of the work people do could be at risk of being automated. One of those researchers is Johannes Mornius. He's a professor of spatial economic analysis and regional planning at the University of Redlands Business School, and he joins me right now. Professor, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We heard from these port workers who are getting replaced or likely getting replaced by robots and artificial intelligence, computer automation. What other jobs are most at risk of being automated?
Well, aside from logistics jobs in general, everything that happens behind closed doors is at higher risk than that's what's customer facing. Just think of your tax accountant. People use TurboTax now. So what we're seeing is that a lot of people that perform repetitive tasks are at risk. Just go to a McDonald's now, you may see 10, 20 input tablets that replace the cashier.
This is one of those situations, though, where it's an expedient way, right, to get the service that you want. You go to McDonald's and there's not a person you have to interact with. You can just hit the tablet and get your McNuggets and there you go. But for the worker, the person who's normally doing this, I mean, those are a lot of jobs, right?
That is a lot of jobs, yes. But right now what we're seeing, you know, if you go to a Lowe's, if you go to a Home Depot, if you think of a lot of other types of retail sellers, they have moved their cashiers into customer service. So that's a win-win for both in the sense that they don't do the repetitive job at the cashier anymore. They now help customers find the type of product that they'd like to have more quickly. That speeds up sales. And customers actually have a better experience overall, so they're more likely to buy. Whether this is true for the sous chef, I kind of doubt that.
I mentioned Riverside and San Bernardino, Ontario. These are inland empire cities, and you're over there at the University of Redlands. Why are those cities and that area particularly at risk of big job losses?
Well, it's because of the types of jobs that currently are most prevalent there. So if you drive through Ontario past the airport, what you see is warehouses left and right. And so specifically the logistics sector offers huge opportunities for automation. It's more than 70% in the logistics sector actually jobs that could be replaced by automation in the long run. And some of that can happen actually quite quickly.
How quickly is quickly for these jobs that will be lost? How soon are we talking about?
If I had a crystal ball, then it would make my job now much, much easier. Completely dying out, that's a slow process. But starting to be replaced, that can be pretty quick.
Technologically, Professor, mm-hmm. this sounds exciting because we have these things that can do things, you know, much faster, more efficiently. But to the average human being who needs work, who has a family to support, or perhaps just to support him or herself, sounds scary, right?
It is. It is, absolutely. And let me tell you why I think it's specifically scary this time around. So if you think of technology, then everyone pretty much agrees that in the long run, technology has always been great at creating new job opportunities. But very often, it took a long time for those to materialize. If we think of the Industrial Revolution, researchers claim it took two generations before real wages went up. And now, when we look at the Digital Revolution, what is scary to me is that automation, as we see it rolling upon us, is specifically targeting the jobs at the lower end of the income distribution, at the lower end of the educational distribution.
And these are specific populations, right, who are more susceptible to this?
Well, it's all the types of populations that hold entry-level jobs, that hold jobs that don't require much of an education. So we looked at it across demographic groups, and what we found was that Hispanics, Blacks, the young, and the one with low levels of education have the highest susceptibility rates. So it's concentrated by race and ethnicity, and it's concentrated by age.
What would you tell those folks who are susceptible to being replaced by computer automation, by a robot? What do you say to somebody in this new, quote-unquote, new economy?
It really depends on your situation. If you're 5 years away from retirement, don't bother. If you are in your 30s or 40s, it's the time to take on evening classes, to deepen specific skills that you have and try to learn things that are less susceptible to automation. And we understand pretty well what kind of jobs computers do well, what kind of jobs robots can do well, and what will take a long time to actually transition into full automation. But it's not only those folks. We need to start at the middle school level. Every kid that enters middle school needs to understand that they will not have a career for the rest of their life, that they need to be lifelong learners. And what they learn in middle school and high school is the type of acquisition of knowledge that needs to carry them through their entire life. So learning skill acquisition, how do I quickly acquire a new skill? These are the new things that really matter the most.
So the moral of the story here is what? Don't fight. You can't fight automation. You have to just be prepared for it.
You can't fight automation. So if we don't automate, it's going to be our neighbors. Maybe China, it may be Korea, which is already much more automated than we are. It's going to be Japan, Germany. We are in a global context, and current tariff wars don't really change that. There are lots of new opportunities arising from that too. So, you know, it's not only that it's all bad, it's all risky, it's all doom and gloom. To the contrary, in the long run, I really believe we will come out well. Don't forget, automation can remove a lot of jobs that have been incredibly burdensome. There are lots of dangerous jobs still in our economy, boring jobs. They can be automated and it'll be to the better of all of us. So there are plenty of opportunities, and it's for those who stay flexible at heart and at mind who will be able to seize those opportunities. And so as long as that is the case, it would be to our detriment to fight automation.
Johannes Mornius, professor of spatial economic analysis and regional planning at the University of Redlands Business School. Professor, thank you for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much for inviting me. It was fun to be here.
No computers at this point here on public radio, so we need to obviously keep the radio station going in the last days of the KCRW OneDrive Pledge Drive, a fundraiser that you may or may not know is going on, because we haven't made a big deal of it, certainly haven't interrupted any of the programming to tell you about it, and today we have this ambitious challenge from one of our generous KCRW supporters. Adam Isaacs will match your contribution if we can reach $10,000 by midnight tonight. Again, your donation will get matched dollar for dollar if you can, or if we can reach that $10,000 threshold by midnight tonight. Add to that the chance to win a couple of pair of passes to each of the six KCRW World Festival concerts over at the iconic Hollywood Bowl. KCRW.com/join. And thank you for your support of public radio. If you joined, if you haven't, renew or perhaps even add a little bit to it. Well, coming up on this program, fighting gentrification before it gets too expensive to live in a neighborhood. An example from Orange County, just ahead on Greater LA.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Back with Greater LA, I'm Steve Chiatakis. The cycle of gentrification can go a lot like this. Artists move into a neighborhood, they make it cool, and then other people want to move into that neighborhood, people with money, and then things get really expensive. In Boyle Heights, local activists have been trying to get rid of artist galleries, but it's a different situation in Santa Ana. It wants artists. It's even building low-income housing for them. Gustavo Arellano is our OC Lion, and he's here with KCRW's Orange County Line. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
All right, what's happening in Santa Ana? Why are they trying to bring in a bunch of artists?
So this is interesting. There's this old bank building on the corner of Main and 17th. It actually used to house the OC Weekly offices, a paper that I was at forever. And it was vacant for a couple of years. Now they're turning it into a live-work apartments, not just lofts, but apartments for artists who can prove that they don't make a lot of money and they want to live in Santa Ana.
All right, so all this housing, why housing? Why are they trying to get all these people into the city?
This is a long, 25 years of efforts by the city of Santa Ana to try to make it into an artist colony. In fact, downtown Santa Ana years ago was rebranded as an artist village, and there was actually lofts that were built with private funds specifically to try to lure in artists. But it's interesting, you talked about how the cycles of gentrification. Yeah, the artists come in. They gentrify the area, then rich people come in and boot out the gentrifiers, the artists. So in this case, the city of Santa Ana is trying to do it right by saying, okay, it's going to be rent controlled. We're going to limit it to a certain amount of people. We want to have a certain amount of artists from the city, but we're going to open it up to everyone. So the city's trying to basically rectify the wrongs of the past, but we'll see how it actually goes.
Is it really just housing, or are we talking about like other amenities as well to encourage the sort of artistic freedom?
Obviously, housing is the most important thing because, going back to La Boheme, artists cannot afford to live anywhere in this world, it seems like, unless it's a loft. But the city also wants to encourage the arts. So they're trying to get, they're going to have labs there, digital labs. They're going to have labs for people to be able to work. They're going to encourage these artists to try to give back to the community with workshops. They really want to have these artists. Like they're saying, well, if you're going to live here and we're going to subsidize part of your rent, well, you have to give back to the community to be able to to justify for the people like the activists of Boyle Heights, a lot of who I know, also who have connections to Santana, to make sure that they don't start protesting the hell out of this development.
It can be really expensive to live in Orange County. I know, especially along the coast, but in other parts of the county where you thought it might be a little cheaper than, say, L.A., it can be really pricey. Is that true of downtown Santa Ana as well?
It's interesting because downtown Santa Ana has, there were some stats with the Orange County Register showing how the 19701 area code where this development is going to be is actually one of the most affordable zip codes in Orange County. But still, even in that zip code, the average rent for a single, just one room apartment is $1,700 a month, which is absolutely insane. No one would have ever thought Santa Ana, which historically was always the affordable place for people in Orange County to live in, would be overpriced, but that's where we're at right now. So, and this is just one part of the bigger issue of affordable housing in Santa Ana. The rest of Orange County still doesn't care. They're like, who cares? We don't want people who need affordable housing in our city limits. So Santa Ana is trying to take the lead on this, but going through an interesting way with the artists.
Well, what about other cities trying stuff like that? Not necessarily in Orange County, but in other parts of the state. I mean, are we seeing other sort of preemptive measures, as it were, to help make housing more affordable?
It's always these new urbanists who say, oh, we need the creative class. Like Richard Florida would always talk about that. Bring in the creative class, then your downtowns are going to go, are going to blossom, and you're going to get more people in. So, like, for instance, in Nashville, they're trying to bring in musicians. LA, I know, has tried to do this with artists for years and years and years. But to be a little bit libertarian in this, sometimes you just want to let the market dictate values. And really, to me, it's going to be interesting what exactly constitutes art. So the women, let's say Mexican immigrants who make their own artesanías or grow their own flowers for Day of the Dead, are they considered artists, or are we talking about people who already have their own galleries? So I applaud Santa Ana for what they're trying to do, but trust me, a lot of people are going to be watching this with very, very close eyes.
All right, very close eyes. But again, these preemptive measures, do we know if they help, like going in ahead of time and saying, all right, we're going to set this area up for you, and we want to see how it goes. Like, have we seen how it goes in other places? You mentioned Nashville, but I mean, think about the tech area in the Bay Area. You know, they probably wanted to bring the creative class to Cupertino or Sunnyvale or other places.
It never works. Gentrification is like a Galactus that goes all around the United States, makes everything the same, and working class people are always priced out. So I don't think it's going to work. Again, you could hope for the best, but just, you know, yeah, go to San Francisco, go to the Mission District, go to downtown LA, go to the art district right there, see how much it's worked there.
Our OC Lion, Gustavo Arellano, writes for the LA Times every Monday. He's here with OC Line. Gustavo, thanks.
Gracias.
Let's go!
Well, we have our own neighborhood here at KCRW. It's a neighborhood of ideas, a neighborhood of music, a neighborhood of journalism. Stories that you can find on this radio station that you perhaps cannot find elsewhere. And it's the last days of KCRW's Undrive Pledge Drive, our semi-annual fundraiser. Today we have this ambitious challenge that we're telling you about from one of our generous KCRW supporters. Adam Isaacs is going to match it. Match your contribution if we can reach $10,000 by midnight tonight. This is an exciting challenge in the final days of the KCRW Undrive Pledge Drive. Again, one of those things where we're not really interrupting the programming at all. We're just telling you in 30-second increments, hey, this is your radio station. We'd love for you to be a part of it. KCRW.com/join. And thank you for your support of public radio in Southern California. Again, $10,000 by tonight at midnight, and Adam Isaacs will match your contribution. So thanks for being with us for Greater LA Today. Catherine Barnes, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Christian Bordahl, they make this show happen. They work very, very hard to do so. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Glad you joined us today. Have a great day. Let's do it again tomorrow.